Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
You guys just get lost in the woods of Alabama. Have you not seen My Cousin Vinny? This is going to be like a remake. Pat and Pete get arrested in Beecher County.
Pete Thamel.
The best you can hope for is to die in a bye week. Is that the new Nebraska refrain?
With SI's Pat Forty.
When you cite the Mike Tomlin line, you're pretty well saying, I ain't leaving.
Here's Pat, Pete, and Dan.
Welcome to the pod. Thanksgiving week. And we are thankful for all the hate out there. All the petty. All the rivalries. All the alums and not even alums, the fans that didn't even go to the school of like these, let's just say the states that tend to rank last and near last and everything. But they attend they root for the university of instead of the state, right?
Yeah.
And they look down their noses at that, right? We like that. We like it all. We got the Egg Bowl coming on Thanksgiving night. We are all rooting for dog pee touchdown celebration to swing the game and cost like 50 people their jobs. This is the weekend. You can throw anything you want in the field. We won't care. We'll support you. Mustard bottles. We want it. Brothers and sisters fighting. House divided. We want it all. Border wars. It's the most wonderful time of the year, isn't it, Pat? You hate everything.
Oh, yeah. No, I embrace the hate. Celebrate the hate. Anticipate the hate. It's everywhere, man. It's not just the Iron Bowl. It's not just Ohio State, Michigan. It's not just the Egg Bowl. Although, you know, the Egg Bowl kind of is its own haven of crazy. But, I mean, here, Kentucky's playing Louisville in my state, right? It's a big game. Because they're playing and both teams are pretty good. And now the flashpoint, this, you know, there's always a flashpoint, always a class warfare thing. Some of the Kentucky fans are saying it's dangerous to go to Louisville Stadium for a night game because that neighborhood's scary. And all of a sudden we're back in the 60s when that used to be the thing out in the state in Kentucky. You don't want to go to Louisville. It's dangerous there. They have black people there. You know, that sort of thing. So it never ends. It's always... always something to get everybody fired up, riled up, and they're doing it in Eugene, and they're doing it in Stillwater, and they're doing it in Gainesville this week. It's everywhere.
I like the Pacific Northwest. The Oregon schools have the Civil War, okay? I mean, that's pretty ominous. I think they banned that term because it's too ominous.
Yes.
And then the Washington schools have the Apple Cup. So nice.
Nice apple picking Saturday.
Winner gets an apple. They got a Civil War and an Apple Cup. Right?
Apple Cup is a little Apple Cup. It is a little too kind and gentle, the Apple Cup. You know?
It's not true either.
Well, of course not. No.
It's not about
And that's
the
like
Apple
if
Cup.
They let them actually swing the axe in the Paul Bunyan axe game between Minnesota and Wisconsin. Then you might see some stuff. You know, that Minnesota nice goes out the window when they've lost like 15 of the last 16 or whatever it is to Wisconsin.
Oh yeah. And I think the best part of Rivalry Week, like, it's awesome that Ohio State, Michigan has these stakes, right? It's awesome that Auburn can ruin Alabama's season and keep them up from the playoff. Like, that stuff's awesome. But the best part of Rivalry Week is the hatred where there really aren't any stakes. You are just showing up to hate the other team because you hate them so much. Like, and you may get to go to the CarQuest Bowl instead of the Weed Eater Bowl if you win. But, like, that's real fun. That's the real essence of this rivalry week. And I think the Egg Bowl, which is just this wondrous cauldron of vitriol, epitomizes that. But like Washington State, they hate each other. The Civil War has some stakes this time. Oregon State can gum up the Pac-12 North race with an upset. By the way, one they could very well pull too. But I just really like when you got two 7-4 teams or a 6-5 team just banging around. And that doesn't mean like, because the stakes aren't high, the fans are getting less drunk and they're going to be less obnoxious. Like it actually like is a salute to those fans that they bring it at that level. So I'm saluting the hate in hate week.
We're all there for the hate. All right, let's get to some hate.
Yeah.
This is people, schools that hated their coach so much, they fired them, whether they deserved it or not. whether they have actually any plan to improve, whether they just walked into the wandering desert of Tennessee football searching for coaches. We don't know.
I must say, this is going to be the craziest coaching carousel ever, and Tennessee somehow is involved. That's a shock.
Truly. It's amazing.
They may get a coach a raise or two, Sully, just for old time's sake.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's true. Oklahoma can open up.
The fans still chart the planes for other schools just out of habit.
Yeah, honestly, Vol Twitter needs to open up a business, Vol Twitter Inc., yeah. and hunt down planes for fellow college football fans.
They can report Gruden, you know, having lunch with somebody somewhere.
Yep,
Gruden's free. Maybe he's at Calhoun's this weekend. Nobody took a picture.
With Peyton Manning. Yeah.
With Peyton Manning, but nobody snapped a picture. Mm-hmm. Why would anyone notice those two walking in?
Just get a table in the back.
What if Josh Heupel goes back to Florida?
Oh!
I'm literally making that up.
Yeah, let's make this one up. Here we go, Sully. Lincoln Riley to LSU and Josh Heupel to Oklahoma. And the Vols are back on the plane and on the rock, writing that they need John Gruden.
Yeah, they need. I would turn Neyland into a parking lot at that point for the baseball stadium.
So he's moved on to baseball.
Yep.
Neyland's got those weird like dorms in it, like those weird these rooms with these windows. It's like, is there ghosts living in there? Who is in there? One's cleaned that place in a while. It's definitely odd. All right, what are we hearing for LSU? What do we got? Anybody got any? If let's play this game, okay? We don't know. Let's take a guess. If you were to say right now, who will be the coach? You get one choice. I don't want to list about five guys, Pete. One choice. Who is? And I'll list off the schools. All right, you guys ready? Yep. Lightning round.
Lightning.
There's a lot of damn jumps. Not lightning. LSU. Who's going to be the coach next year? Pat.
Okay. I'll say this. This was funny. Like two people, you know, that cover the team down there came out with lists Monday, like top three candidates for LSU, and they were both completely different. Six different names. Two lists. So I think Scott Woodward's got everybody pretty well bamboozled at this point. You want one name for LSU? I'm going to give you Dave Aranda, former defensive coordinator there, now the head coach at Baylor.
Pete, you go with that, or do you have a different name?
Dave Aranda stays at Baylor, and I go with Jimbo Fisher.
Really?
If only because I have no clue who they hire if they don't hire Jimbo. Like, no clue.
Okay.
I'm not certain they have one, but I have no idea.
Speaking of rivalry games, we have that game, LSU Texas A&M.
Pacemaker game.
Made famous when someone got punched in the pacemaker.
If Sully ever actually did like a greatest hits of our podcast, the pacemaker game, I don't know if it'd be like top five, but it would definitely be in like the rankings.
It was up there. That was Steve Kragthorpe, Jimbo Fisher's nephew, and Kevin Falk.
Kevin Falk
all dusting it up. I mean, yeah, after a 74-72 game. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah, Jimbo's nephew punched Kragthorpe in the pacemaker.
And except it wasn't even really a punch. It was just kind of like a push or whatever.
Yeah, it wasn't really that hard. And you don't want to fight Kevin Falk. I mean, don't do that. But that was good because that rivalry needed some spice, and there's nothing that spices stuff up like punching a dude in a pacemaker.
After what, six overtimes?
Seven.
Yeah. Seven, sorry.
I think Jimbo stays at Texas A&M. Call me crazy, but I actually believe the guy on this, and I don't know why, because I'm already regretting saying that. I believe a coach.
So who
it's
you
like
got?
Pat and his picks.
Here's the thing. I actually looked at his recruiting that he was talking about. I mean, it's really
good. It's very good.
It's really getting good.
Yeah, and the running back for Baton Rouge would follow him to LSU. You know what I mean? Like this stuff.
I know, but they are turning a corner here. If they put a couple of these together and look out.
So who are you going with, Dan?
I know this doesn't fit the Scott Woodward grab a celebrity coach, but I think I'm going to go with Billy Napier. I just think he's going to end up being the guy who's going to pop over and they're going to go with him. I don't know. So clearly, we have no idea. He's the
Billy Napier because of the commute.
Probably. I don't know. I got nothing. All right, let's move to Florida.
I'm going to say Matt Campbell, the Iowa State coach, who has definitely positioned himself by losing many close games to be very available to talk soon.
Whew. Yeah, he's very available because his team hasn't been very good. Jeez Louise. I just, again, I look, he's done a nice job at Iowa State, but I do not understand the infatuation. That's Billy Napier's spot is Gainesville. That's what I think. I am going with him ending up there because I think LSU has its sights elsewhere. And so Billy Napier makes the big jump up, Sun Belt to SEC.
That would have been my close 1B. Like, I think that it's one of those two.
I think Matt Campbell goes to Washington. That's my guess. I think Matt Campbell's going to go to Washington.
That sounds that sounds like a movie. Matt Campbell goes to Washington. Ernest Young, yes. Senator.
And Florida, I don't know. Napier is possible there, obviously. I don't think they get Mark Stoops to leave, but I think they make a run at Mark Stoops. But I don't know. This is the tricky bit of that. I do think how about this? I'll make a more interesting pick. I'll say James Franklin. I think James Franklin would be tremendous there. James Franklin has an appetite to recruit. He likes it. And I think that is, you know how they always go, you got an offensive coach and then that's not working, so you hire a defensive coach.
Dan, if you go too far down the Franklin hole, like the compensation committee at Penn State is like meeting now to, I think, approve a new contract for Franklin. So
that doesn't mean he's going to sign it.
No, yes. Doesn't mean he's going to sign it.
But that's that could take him off the board.
It could. Let's just say this. This entire segment should be termed irresponsible speculation.
Okay, there we go. Good. Good. I like that.
I can't wait like 3 years from now on Twitter, somebody's going to be like, you said Matt Campbell is going to go to Florida. You were wrong.
We are not reporting any of this. We're throwing it out there. USC. Who is going to be the USC coach? Oh, remember that program?
Jeez. Yeah.
Who is going to be the USC coach?
I think it's DTR already after he heard of the whole team last week.
Oh. They could do worse. They have done worse. Pat, you got a choice out there? This segment's gone well.
I'm struggling. I think they pulled an NFL name out of the hat because I think they've been in the mix for some of these coaches we've been talking about. I don't think Luke Fickell wants to go there. Certainly not this year, not now. So I don't know where else they're going to turn. I don't think you bring Chris Peterson out of retirement. Don't think you bring Bob Stoops. Ah, you know what? I'll say that. Bob Stoops. Bob Stoops to USC. There you go.
So I think it's going to be Matt Campbell.
You just hired him off to Florida.
I traded him for Napier. Napier's going to go to Florida.
How many jobs can this guy coach? He is a talented dude. He's coaching three teams.
And drinking that tap. That's why.
He's going to have that in his contract. He's going to have a direct pipeline of tap water from Ames to Los Angeles.
LA? Yes. I think there's like a bagel shop in LA that brings their water in from like Brooklyn or something.
That sounds very LA.
That would figure.
Or so they say.
And then charge you like $9 for a bottle of it. Yeah.
Mm, that Brooklyn tap water.
They just use the water to cook the bagel. The bagels.
Oh, okay. Okay.
The water is the big thing with the bagel. Yeah.
And then the bagels cost $11.50 instead of $3.
Some good rat water from Brooklyn. Love it.
it makes a good bagel, though. They make a good bagel. Everybody
moves to LA and then tries to recreate where they're from, right? You've been to Sonny McClain's for Bruins games, Dan, or Patriots games, Red Sox games, whatever. Like, everyone goes to LA to live in this paradise, but they want like the Steelers bars in LA on Sunday, or it's like, you know, Mardi Gras every week. It's like, the only good part.
The only good part of LA is the weather. Everything else, like traffic jams and ugly architecture, and it's like they took paradise and just plowed it over. Just
not ugly women, though, Dan. I know. Yeah. I know you're not. You're usually, your head's not on a swivel for that, but they're, you know.
Well, okay. I will grant you that one.
Tends not to be ugly.
Sources.
Indeed. I'll concede that one. All right. What else we got? Miami.
Hoof Gerst.
I don't know. Go ahead, Pete. Anybody speak up?
Pete.
The Lane train is coming.
Yeah.
Let's go. Bring with it your scandal, your NCAA investigation, your, you know, 63 points a game. Every quarterback's going to fight to go. Oh, it is going to be just like, I want it to happen so bad that
you and Nevin Shapiro.
Yes. Hey, and if Nevin ends up being right, look, he spawned our podcast, spawned stories written like stories about you quoting Nevin from text saying Lane's going to Miami, right? I mean, that's unbelievable.
Yeah, it was in the Jackson Clarion Ledger.
There you go.
Big story. I used to be a subscriber. I didn't resubscribe this year. Although Jackson State's been very good this year. Very, very good.
Selling out that house, too. Looking like a good crowd down there.
I would credit our insight, but really, what one of our listeners would not click on a Nevin Shapiro, Lane Kiffin headline, right?
Yeah, like, that's
Pat the saying reaction. Go to a beer after a long day of writing. Like, no, I'm not going to fall for that headline.
Nevin Shapiro says he's leaving Lane Kiffin will leave Ole Miss and come to Miami. That's what it said. People will go, you made that story up. I didn't make it up. It's exactly what Nevin said. You can trust him or not. I don't know. I mean,
I bet Lane Kiffin himself clicked on that story.
I'm sure he did. Let's just say this.
I'm a little disappointed he didn't tweet it, because he will tweet stories about himself on occasion.
Yeah. So
that is actually was telling
that he, like,
it was interesting he didn't, I thought. Right. Nobody has denied Nevin's scoop yet, by the way. Yeah. Like, Miami has not come out and said, oh, no, we're not hiring him. And I haven't seen Lane go on Miami. Heck no. What's that? No, I don't want to go down there.
Yeah,
who's the Miami AD going to be? Is that too in the weeds for our little ill-fated game show here?
Yeah,
game show setting itself up for mockery.
Matt Campbell is going to be the AD.
Tom Jurich hires Lane Kiffin at Miami.
Let's do it. Let's bring it on.
That would be all fun. Right.
Yeah. Anybody got any? All right, we'll add one more. I don't know if anyone's got a thing. Virginia Tech.
I would love to see Virginia Tech hire Jamie Chadwell. Although I would also say Jamie Chadwell's record in games that are not quarterbacked by Grayson McCall is less exciting. If he can bring Grayson McCall with him for a year at VT, that might get him off to a nice start. I don't know. I'm sure there's, plenty of other people that would want that job, but it's not, for reasons we discussed, like if you don't control the Tidewater area, you don't, hit it big in the DMV, you can slide pretty badly. So I'm not sure that's a job that there's a bunch of great people clamoring for. Like if I'm Dave Clawson, I don't think I leave my nice little Shangri-La at Wake Forest for Virginia Tech. So I'm going to say Jamie Chadwell.
Well, since I've really messed this game up quite a bit, I'm going to not follow Pat, even though I may feel that way. And I'm going to go out on my own. I'm going to say Mike Elko gets the Virginia Tech job. Former assistant to Dave Clawson at Wake Forest, so he knows the ACC. Former assistant at Richmond, so he has the key recruiting ties. And look, Virginia Tech is an everyman job. Like, Clawson and his penny loafers don't quite fit at Virginia Tech. Mike Elko's an everyman. He's a Jersey guy. He's, he looks like a defensive coordinator should look like. And I think he knows enough of the recruiting relationships from his time at Richmond. He can go into the 757, which is the key recruiting area. He's been a big part of recruiting those monster classes at Texas A&M. Virginia Tech, which has had no identity under Justin Fuente, will suddenly get a hard hat, lunch type identity again. So I think Mike Elko could really crush it there. It would take some creativity and a little bit of insight to see it.
Yeah, no, I like that. And he could bring back the Bud Foster lunch pail for sure.
Yes, yes. And really, why not hire a guy if he can just bring back like a sideline prop? Long before the turnover chain, the lunch pail was a staple on the sideline.
Not bad. All right, TCU. We'll do one more after that. I lied about the one more.
Done deal, right? I mean, we're all expecting Sonny Dykes. I think Pete reported that's imminent, and that's definitely been the expectation.
Yeah, and Rhett Lashley's already lined up to replace him. So like there's literally like they're both looking for staffs right now this week. Rhett for SMU and Sonny for TCU. It is yes, that will be the least surprising coach announcement of all time. They haven't run a coaching search at TCU in like 22 years, and they have no idea how anticlimactic it's. They're gonna have like a press conference, and we're gonna be like, oh, he isn't, like, they haven't trotted him out yet.
He isn't there yet. Yeah.
Yeah. Though I actually thought it was so obvious that they might just, like, SMU might be like, hey, man, you just want to go? Like, it's just been that obvious and awkward this week. But they are sputtering through.
It's like those kids that show up to ask the girl to the prom or something with the sign. Like, you know. Yeah. You seen those things? The promposal.
Oh, yeah. You don't want to show up with the sign unless you know what the answer is going to be.
Yeah, because you'd be absolutely, I mean, talk about humiliation, right? You know, right?
It's like the in-stadium wedding proposal's gone wrong.
Yeah, right? Yeah, there you go. In-stadium. You don't want to just throw that one out there and hope, right? That's going to be humiliating. All right, you know what? Let me bring this up. This is a name that, for some reason, I got asked a few times on radio this week, and Kirk Herbstreit kind of mentioned, he threw it out there slightly, although not quite what he's saying, but Brian Kelly. Brian Kelly, you know, could Brian Kelly go to USC? Could Brian Kelly go to Florida? Brian Kelly has all of a sudden, I think people are looking and realizing how good of a coach he is, and something we've long noted here. If nothing else, certainly of late, they beat all the teams they're supposed to beat, which will often keep you a job. I keep telling people there's no way Brian Kelly's leaving Notre Dame, and my reasoning is recruiting class in 2022, but the one he's about to sign, and then the one he has already building for the class of 2023, are better than any two recruiting classes that he's ever had at Notre Dame. And I think these playoff appearances, and then certainly the addition of Marcus Freeman as his defensive coordinator, has changed the dynamic of recruiting at Notre Dame, where Brian Kelly is not sitting there saying, hey, maybe I'll give something else a try. It's like, hey, man, I might be able to make a run here. I don't know if I can win the title, but maybe. And so I don't think he's going anywhere. But this name keeps coming up. I don't know why. Any thought of Brian Kelly being a candidate anywhere here?
So it's interesting. Kirk Herbstreit's brought it up a couple times. And Kirk Herbstreit's very plugged in, to the point where Brian Kelly had to deny that he would go anywhere. And he did so pretty vociferously this week by saying, basically, like, channeled the Mike Tomlin quote about, like, somebody would – he said – he would have to have a fairy godmother offer, I believe, and then have to check with his wife beforehand. So here's my take on Brian Kelly, who I've known for a long time. Brian Kelly basically trudged through 8 years at Notre Dame to help, like, build it up. Now, I don't mean trudge by, like, he was miserable there, but it was hard. Like, they were behind in facilities. They were behind. They didn't even have, like, separate eating areas for the players. Like, he has basically pushed a rock uphill to the point now where he's going to have a bad team that could make the playoff this year. Like, they're 11-1. They're not that good. They're not terrible, but, like, they are just like, he has done the work to get this thing humming at a level where it really hasn't been since the Wheelhouse Holtz days. And I believe Brian's 58. Would he leave to go push the boulder up the hill somewhere else? Or would he, like Dan pointed out, enjoy the fruits of what he has built and done? Like, it's not easy for Brian Kelly, but the harder parts have been taken care of, and he has fought through the harder parts. So it's my instinct that, look, everybody likes to be flirted with, everybody likes to be looked at a little, but I don't see Brian leaving. I see him retiring at Notre Dame. And he said that to me on the record, and again, guys change their minds and all that stuff, but I really feel like this is Brian Kelly's last stop. I believe him. And yeah, when he goes to LSU in 2 weeks, I look forward to someone on an LSU blog taking the audio of that and mocking me. So
no, I agree completely. I think he has reached a comfortable place, and not just a comfortable place, but a winning place, a big time winning place. You win 10 games now every year, sometimes 11, sometimes 12. Yes, you cited the recruiting. It's all working. I don't see him having a lot of interest in going elsewhere. The dynamics I see involved in this are a couple of things. First of all, we have now reached a point this year, coming off the pandemic year, when nobody had any money and there was doom and gloom. And my God, how are we even going to turn the lights on with all the money we're losing? To now, it's just an explosion of salary. We have reached that next level, you know, where it used to be like $6 million was crazy. And then all of a sudden we got to 8 and 9, and now we're going to go over that per year. And so if you're sitting there and your agent's sitting there saying, dude, you're in the top 10 with a team that shouldn't be, let's go kick some tires and just see what more money we can get. And let's just make sure that we are achieving peak marketability out there at a time when we can. I don't think it's more than that. I agree. I thought what Brian Kelly said threw a lot of cold water on it. When you cite the Mike Tomlin line, you're pretty well saying, I ain't leaving. The other thing too, and I love Kirk Herbstreit a lot, I remember from the days at ESPN in 2007 when he swore he was never going to report coaching news again. He should probably just stick with not reporting coaching news again.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think the recruiting's so good right now that this is what he's always wanted. I mean, and they don't, Notre Dame always has good players. They have lots of four-star, you know, some guys that make the top 100 to 200, those kind of guys. They rarely get the rival's top 100, which is basically like top three draft picks, third-round draft pick, let alone top 20, 30 guys. They've got two top 30s committed as the junior class. They got a bunch of top 100s. This class could rank in the top five nationally. We'll see as it pans out. But this is way better. And I just think, like, if I'm him, I'm like, this is going great. I love my – I hope – Notre Dame's got to hope Marcus Freeman doesn't leave.
Right. That's a key thing. Because
very key.
Yeah. I mean, he's young, real young. But, boy, he's done impressive work at Notre Dame and before that at Cincinnati. And he can recruit, too.
You know, and I wonder if it's like, hey, man, I'm going to coach this out. You hang out here a few years and you can be the Notre Dame coach. You know, something like that. But there's a lot of opportunity there. So I just don't think he's going. But his name keeps coming up. So we will see. Anything could happen out there. I'll tell you a place that is not open that we all thought maybe should be. It's Nebraska. Scott Frost will be back. 3-8. They did a thing in the Omaha paper. Dirk Chatelain of the Omaha paper does a great job. Decide to go down the rabbit hole and figure out because they've lost all eight games by like a touchdown or less or something. Is the 2021 Nebraska Cornhuskers the greatest 3-win team ever? And yeah, this is what they're doing in Nebraska right now in their spare time.
They should just watch the same movie again.
Well, they do. That's why Scott Frost stars in it. It's the last champion. Yeah. That's why he's back. And he concluded he was. So congratulations, Nebraska Cornhuskers. That's like the UConn 2020 national championship, New York Times. The Omaha, you're the greatest 3-win team. Unimpressed was a man named Milton A. Munson Jr. Milton A. Munson Jr. He is a 73-year-old native of Nebraska who unfortunately passed away last week. And there was a obituary in the paper, and I'll just read you some of it. The grim reality, this is on the cause of death of poor Milton. The grim reality of the Nebraska Cornhuskers finishing yet another season with a losing record proved to be too much to bear for Milton Andrew Munson, who decided he'd seen enough of this world during the team's recent bye week. This is literally what his family put out there. The Huskers may not have seen him into the afterlife with a victory, but at least they didn't lose.
That seems to be the Nebraska attitude this year. Oh, we didn't lose on bye week, or oh, we didn't lose by too much. Poor Milton.
Sometimes that's the best you can hope for. That is what it says. Yeah, Milton apparently just gave up on life because the Huskers suck.
Isn't that the line from The Gambler, Dan? The best you can hope for is to die in your sleep. The best you can hope for is to die in a bye week. Is that the new Nebraska refrain?
Man, life is grim in Nebraska. It's tough out there on the plains. I mean, it's like, F it. These guys are never going to get good. I'm just going to die. Memorial services will be at 1 p.m. Wednesday, November 24th at the Livingston Butler Voland Funeral Home in Hastings. In lieu of flowers, please place an irresponsibly large wager on Nebraska beating Iowa. That's his request from the grave.
I want to go to this funeral and especially the wake thereafter, you know?
Yeah. Well, people are going to be tailgating that sucker. It's going to be awesome.
Wednesday at 1 in Hastings, Nebraska, a pastor Joel Remmers will be officiating.
I may show.
You know, Nebraska's a 1.5-point underdog against Iowa. So it's +105 on the money line and BetMGM. So, Milton, I wish I had known you, buddy. You're all right in my book, man. That's a funny-ass obituary.
And really, if it's going to be irresponsible, you can't take the 1.5. You got to bet the money line, right? Like, yeah. Let's be honest here. If someone's like, we could lose 17-16. No. Milton doesn't want your point and a half. All right.
No, you got to bet straight up.
I absolutely love it. Don't send flowers. I'm dead. I don't need a flower. I hope you make some money on the Huskers. Maybe they'll pull it out.
I agree with him there. I wonder. All right. So I'm looking now. Hastings. There's an aqua court pool in Hastings. There's the Children's Museum of Central Nebraska. There's a lot of places I could hit after the funeral. It's, you know, it's out there. It's kind of near Grand Island, not far from Kearney.
I bet there's a grain elevator.
I bet there's more than one. Looks like you're maybe, you know, an hour or two due west from Lincoln. So we might have to all go and place a wager for Milton.
Fan of the year candidate. All right. One last thing we want to wrap up from last week which is just an ongoing saga. Coach Eli Drinkwitz at Missouri, just trying to find ways to be relevant in the SEC. And I love it. We're here for you. He's causing strife with Florida. Obviously there's a huge bench clearing brawl last year between the two teams. There was a lot of belief that Dan Mullen was egging it on. Dan Mullen disagreed with that, decided to wear a Darth Vader. This is a college football podcast. This story is so absurd, but this is all true. Okay. People are like, where do you get the material for this show?
It just provides itself.
So after the brawl, people were on Mullen. So Mullen dressed up as Darth Vader to try to, like, I don't know what, defuse it. And then Missouri beats Florida this year. So Drinkwitz dresses up as I don't know what, Obi-Wan Kenobi or somebody, or Luke Skywalker. And as he defeated the Darth Vader, I guess Skywalker defeated him. And then it goes on, and then Mullen gets fired because that's just damn embarrassing. So Drinkwitz isn't done, though. He's explaining the irony of beating the Gators and Mullen after last year's near brawl. I mean, he's dancing on the grave here. He's dancing on the grave. My father was a farmer. That's good. That's going to play well in Missouri, okay? My father was a farmer, this is Coach Drinkwitz. And there's an old saying, you reap what you sow. First off, you don't have to be a farmer to hear that. Okay.
No, I heard that in, you know, Colorado Springs when I was growing up.
Isn't that in the Bible? Yeah. I mean, it's not like knee high by the 4th of July, man. Yeah. Okay. The farmer bit's just playing up to the crowd. I know what you're doing. It continues. If you sow kindness, you reap kindness. If you sow jackass, you reap jackass.
That's their podcast tagline.
It really should be.
This is better than Jim Harbaugh, philosopher Jim Harbaugh, saying there was a winner, there was a non-winner, but the real winner was football.
Football.
Coach Drinkwitz, that's deep, man.
I could not have seen the next Steve Spurrier coming from him when he was hired. I'll be the first one to say that. And
yeah, like he's got a little sass to him for sure. They win, and he gets a little chesty, which is great. You know, but yeah. a little farm wisdom, little farm justice dispensed in Columbia, Missouri. That was
say that Mullen's got to be pissed.
Oh,
he would want that. I mean, it's easy now to be like, hold me back. He's gone.
Yeah. I mean, throw all the jabs you want. If you give me $12 million to walk out the door, I got to say, I'm sure he's kicking his feet up in his Jordans.
I mean, these guys are already loaded. That's the thing.
Yeah, just don't get boring, Drinkwitz. Like, stay interesting. You know, yeah. We need more inflammatory quotes. I hope he inspires a generation of people who just hurl insults at their competitors, because that's really what we need. Like, if he said, we'll take it one game at a time against the Gators, I don't think that would be very
good. Yeah, not to mention you have our old provocateur Lane Kiffin going down there and saying, oh, you can't hate somebody because they went to a different school? Bullshit. That's exactly what you're supposed to do. Come on, Lane.
Yeah. The Lane Leach combo in the Egg Bowl is a big letdown so far. They need to get back to who they are and what that rivalry is.
Agree. Pretty pathetic. Maybe something will happen this week. Leach is never afraid to mix it up. Like, he gets into it. Lane's a little more passive aggressive.
No, Lane's very passive.
Can you imagine, like, 10 years from now, someone's going to say, who was the coach in the Egg Bowl when the dog leg got lifted? And it's going to be really hard to come up with Matt Luke and Joe Moorhead. Like, it's going to be like, you really, like, no casual college football fan is going to be able to pull those two out of the Bureau of Obscurity.
Yeah, no, that's true. And that's where a great rival, the Egg Bowl elevates obscure people to great positions.
They were both fired in the month.
The dog peeing incident, which happened in what, the 19? Was that
2019? Right.
2019.
It was the same year as the pacemaker punch. I mean, we were loaded that year. We didn't know how good we had it.
Elijah Moore scored for reasons unbeknown to anyone. He decided to celebrate the touchdown by pretending to take a leak like a dog. He went down on all fours, lifted his leg. I don't know how this is a celebration that would be like, hey, I'm proud of myself, or look at me. I don't know. Right. Like, you know, the back, whatever you come up with. I guess he was just peeing on Starkville because that's what he thinks of it.
You know,
like just,
they were mocking the dogs, the bulldogs. You know,
why is it a surprise that dogs pee?
Like, well, this was a previous Ole Miss receiver had done the same thing a couple of years earlier. Yes. Might have been DK Metcalf.
All right. So this is their thing.
It was the most consequential fake dog pee in history.
But the funniest part about that is it's right. Literally tens of millions of dollars traded hands over one lifted leg.
It was. Joe Moorhead got fired too. Like tons of kids decommitted from Ole Miss. Yeah, because of the game, the Rebels were going to go to a bowl. Instead, Mississippi State reached the bowl. But Mississippi State didn't want to go to the bowl because they wanted to fire Joe Moorhead. And just went on and on and on. It was great. It was great. Hopefully we do it again.
I am now like really mad that I didn't devote an entire quarter to the 40-yard dash to the reverberations from that single incident, because Matt Luke and Joe Moorhead lose their jobs. Lane Kiffin and Mike Leach arrive. Nick Rolovich goes to Washington State to ultimately commit career suicide. Willie Taggart shows up in Florida Atlantic to take Lane Kiffin's place. I mean, a lot of stuff happened because of one guy lifting his leg in the end zone on Thanksgiving night. It was amazing.
All right, let's get to these games. There's a couple big games. Maybe you heard.
Yeah.
Maybe you heard this week. A little dust up going down in Ann Arbor this weekend. Ohio State, 10-1. Michigan, 10-1. Winner goes to the Big Ten championship game and stays alive for this playoff. Doesn't get any bigger than this. Ohio State is absolutely rolling right now. Pass offense is sixth in the country. They look tremendous. Michigan looks good. They had the loss up at East Lansing, but that was a very, very close loss. Credit to Jim Harbaugh. Most people wanted fired last year or this or that. Hey, here they are. They got a chance. We'll see if they all still love them in Saturday about 4:00. But for now, Harbaugh's done what he's needed to do. Wolverines are still alive. We will pick this game on the Race for the Case, which will come out Wednesday, a little early. Okay. Cause I know you guys are driving all over the place for Thanksgiving and all that. So check it out on Wednesday. But thoughts on this game, Pat?
Yeah. I mean, I'm so happy to have this game be a big deal again, because it's just awesome when it is. You know, that is one of the best parts of college football, when Ohio State and Michigan meet on artificial turf under a slate gray sky in cold temperatures Thanksgiving weekend. My thoughts are this: winner is damn close to going to the playoff. You know, I mean, you win this and you have just about punched your ticket. You just have to not throw up in the Big Ten championship game. Loser, not necessarily out. Maybe. I mean, you could maybe try to come up with a way that that could happen. Some things would obviously have to fall into place. But third thing, Michigan, if you are 10-0 against everybody but your two biggest rivals, is that still a great season? I think it's a good season. I think it's good enough that you can walk away from this and say, hey, we're back at least to being good. We weren't the embarrassment we were last year, and we've improved from the 2 or 3 years prior to that. And then the fourth thing, though, I mean, like, if Ohio State just continues rolling Michigan, though, at some point, like, where, I mean, do Michigan fans just have to settle for the fact that we are not just second banana, but we're a distant second banana in that league? And then we can get into the game itself in the Race for the Case.
Yeah, all the variants of potential outcomes here are more fascinating than this game's been in a while. Did you go to the 1-2 game, Pat, Lloyd Carr, the Dead Schembechler game when Bo died that week?
Sure did. Okay. I sat next to Dan Wetzel in the press box.
That's right.
I try to forget that too. Yeah, like that was early in my career, one of those big high stakes, just like monster games that you know, like just you could feel it. And it's extremely exciting to have Ohio State and Michigan at this level again. Dan will be going this week because I'm not going. And
are you coming, Pat?
I'm not. I would have told you, and we would have eaten in Jackson, Mississippi, Michigan. But no, I'm going to be at the Iron Bowl with Pete.
This is going to disappoint some of my friends. This has been a very depressing week for me. Numerous friends ask whether Pat is coming so I could bring them to the tailgate.
How about that? See, I'm your cool friend that you could bring to make you look cooler.
I'm like, Pat. And they're like, yeah, he's my favorite guy in the podcast. I'm like, what? What is this?
Yeah.
The competition isn't very good, by the way.
Well, they're supposed to be my friend.
They hear your shtick all the time. They need some new stuff. I see. I could give them that.
Pat and I will continue.
I like
our
your friends
awkward,
more now.
Yeah. Pat and I will continue our awkward tradition of having a mandate on the Friday of Thanksgiving weekend in Columbus, Georgia. So for dinner. So if anyone has any good places open late for dinner in Columbus, Georgia,
Applebee's.
We are wide open. It is a bit of an old podcast joke. Pat loves Columbus, Georgia. I mean, he loves it. Loves it something fierce. We'll talk about how when we drive to Auburn the next day, we like gain an hour and then lose it going back. Is that how it goes? Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, this is, yeah.
That we've Chattahoochee River, man, it does stuff. Yep.
Yes. Pat will refuse to use GPS. He goes to Auburn just by feel. So yeah, we've had this moment. We've also seen some pretty good football games too.
You guys just get lost in the woods of Alabama. Have you not seen My Cousin Vinny? This is going to be like a remake. Pat and Pete get arrested in Beecher County.
Yeah. Yeah, we also walk into the stadium with our eyes down, not making eye contact with anyone.
There ain't a lot of people there that are like rolling out the carpet for you and I.
Yeah, nobody wants to meet Pat and I in Auburn, Alabama. That is very certain.
Bring your own toilet paper. Well, my friends they'll live on. They'll just drink more. All right. Anyway, Pat, who was saying something?
I was talking about the game, and then I started.
Oh, the game. Yeah, it's kind of a big game, so we should discuss this.
Yes, I do think and we'll get into the game and breaking it down. I did a story on Yahoo this week where I talked to like seven coaches who played Michigan this year and why they've turned around and have they turned around. It has been a remarkable turnaround. We've covered it on this podcast. All the credit to Harbaugh, the new coaches, the new schemes. I mean, they are a completely different football program than they were last year. And you don't overhaul both sides of the ball and have it work very often like it has for them. So a lot of credit to Michigan. I still do think it is fascinating. There's a scenario, and we'll pick the game, where Ohio State wins by 21. So what if you do all this work and you're still kind of in the same place? Pat mentioned second banana. Like that would be pretty interesting. Now, I think Michigan fans are just happy to be back to like baseline functional. That means like you shouldn't get railroaded by Wisconsin like they did a couple years ago, or have Rutgers take you to overtime. So this is a fascinating litmus test of the Harbaugh rehab, because this rehab has gotten them back to where they should be. And this will be the biggest measure of progress for how far they need to go.
Agree. This is obviously a huge opportunity for Michigan because everything's on the line. I think unlike Ohio State, you don't think every year you're going to have that opportunity, maybe. Michigan, though, that loss to Michigan State was painful, but here we are. Harbaugh's doing what's reasonable there. I've said this before. The thing with Michigan, and I think what both some Michigan fans don't get, and then a lot of fans around the country maybe don't realize, is the folklore doesn't match the history. The folklore of Michigan football is it's one of the best programs in the country, and it's a national championship program and contend for national championships and all this stuff. That just has never been the case. It's shared a title since, I don't know what, like the 40s, one title. Bo Schembechler never won a national title. He was terrible in the Rose Bowl. When he was playing anyone other than the Big Ten, he wasn't that good. Then, you know who else has one title since then, like in the last 40 years?
Georgia Tech. Colorado.
Yeah. Colorado. Are these teams you go, oh, Georgia Tech's got to win a national championship. Now, Michigan's better than that, but and even that 97 team, I'm not going to disparage that team, and they had Charles Woodson on it, so they were good. But, like, that was then. Like they won the Big Ten and then they got to play Washington State in the Rose Bowl. That ain't the way it works anymore. You know, you're going to get the double barrel of Alabama, Georgia, Clemson, something like that. So, you know, obviously he hasn't gotten there. He needs to do better. But the reality of Michigan is a really nice football program and they do really well and all of that. But this, you know, belief that like it's championships or nothing just isn't based on what the reality of the school and the talent base and all that stuff is. And so that's why I think it sometimes gets confusing for people who are like, well, Michigan should be Ohio State. Ohio State, it's a different level of care. And so it's just different. So Harbaugh's done a nice job, but you don't want to come out of this and be like, we lost to Michigan State, we lost to Ohio State. You know, so he's in it's a weird game. But that said, he's a big underdog. So there's a lot on this beyond just, oh my goodness, we can get to the Big Ten title and win and get to the playoff. There's a lot of it. Harbaugh came back to settle family business, and he hadn't settled any family business.
Yeah, he's not gone Michael Corleone on the other crime families in the Big Ten yet. He is not.
That remains still, yeah, he's undone. Still alive. Yeah.
Yeah.
He needs to shoot Mo Green in the eye. All right, the game and you guys are going to go to the Iron Bowl. Your thoughts on what's all there? I mean, Auburn losing takes a little heat out of it, but crazy things happen when this game is on the plains.
Yeah, no, it does, and that I mean, Pete and I have been there for some of the crazy, and I just you never discount that. That's it. The game in Jordan-Hare, where the atmosphere there for this game is as intense as any atmosphere you will go see on a regular, you know, basis. It is that way every single time. It is deafening. It is super intense. And so you got to be ready to play. And Alabama has been wobbly against several not very good teams. You know, they scraped by Arkansas by a touchdown. They scraped by LSU by a touchdown. They scraped by a Florida team that it turns out was not very good. So, you know, it's not like they're just going to go in and I think and just steamroll Auburn here. Although Auburn, all right, Bo Nix is out. Brian Harsin, in classic Auburn fashion, has already gotten a bunch of people mad at him. And, you know, they're grumbling about that down there. But, you know, I think if you're Alabama, you need to, you know, you're still the main thing you got to do is just really actually just survive this game. And then get to Georgia and hope that you can summon a great game and beat the Bulldogs. So this is really just a survive and advance game. But, you know, I think that most all of us, certainly I would, place them well behind Ohio State right now. I would put them behind Cincinnati. You know, I would put them no higher than fourth in terms of the playoff rankings at this point. They've got some proving to do, frankly. I don't know, again, they have to prove it this weekend, but they will in Atlanta the week after that.
Yeah, this has been talent-wise, you would think Auburn has a chance here. It's a home game. That's always been a difficult place to play. A month ago, I would have told you Brian Harsin was off to an okay start. You know, he'd lost at Penn State, but they were still a factor in the West. October 30th, Auburn's coming off the Ole Miss game. They thumped Arkansas at Arkansas. They beat Ole Miss pretty handily at home. And you're thinking this first year under Brian Harsin is going to be okay. You know, they had a tough loss at Penn State, close call against Georgia State, but figured out a way to pull it out, gutted out that win at LSU that sent Ed Orgeron to the cooler. And you know what? They didn't beat Georgia, but they didn't think they were going to beat Georgia. And I would have thought, you know, boy, Brian Harsin's really made some strides. And then they have just completely been swallowed whole, disappeared on offense at Texas A&M. They gacked up the 28-3 lead at home against Mississippi State, and then they lost at South Carolina, which you never want to do if you're an SEC West school. So I would have thought a month ago that you could argue that Auburn would have been, you know, what, a 2-3 point underdog in this game? You maybe even could have said because of the home field, and it is a wonderful atmosphere and a significant home field advantage. You would have thought, you know, it would have been crazy if they were a 1-point favorite going into this game, because Alabama had looked pedestrian at times. And still, this is a very mortal Alabama team. Young quarterback, defense is just okay. Offensive line isn't maulers. They have good skill, but they don't have the skill they used to have. So, but boy, just Auburn has fallen off. But I will say this about this rivalry. They'll take a 3-game losing streak at Auburn if it means beating Alabama and ruining their hopes and dreams. And that is what makes rivalry week and the hatred of this so special. So I guarantee Jordan Hare will be a cauldron like it usually is, and I am fired up to go. But it's what you make of Auburn. If Brian Harsin loses this game 42-3, that's going to be interesting. Like, because Auburn, they fire coordinators for sport there, right? That's just part of what they do. And so it'd be
or
hard.
Or they try to fire head coaches and replace them with coordinators they like. That's another thing they do for sport.
Yes. Yes.
Well, so, this is what got them in the problem in the first place. If they'd kept Malzahn, they'd probably be doing better. It's like Texas. They're like the mini Texas. They got worse because they changed coaches.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right now, you will not say that Brian Harsin is an upgrade over Gus Malzahn. The recruiting trail has been a disaster for Auburn under Brian Harsin so far. That can change, and there's certainly things built in at Auburn that can help you change them. But right now, I believe they're 12th or 13th, depending on your recruiting service in the SEC. That's a problem because you have to beat Georgia and you have to beat Alabama, and you are not doing it with inferior players. Like, this isn't the Mountain West. You need dudes. And look what happened to Dan Mullen when he didn't have enough dudes. So I could see Brian Harsin gutting through this and really starting next year on the hot seat. I could also see like a job like Arizona State opens and the pool is so limited that he hightails it back to the West Coast at a place that would take him.
Yeah, Washington would be another. I just don't think he's at this
record. He ain't going to Washington.
Yeah, this record and all that. And so, yeah but I agree. We'll see where that heads with that. People always, I know you guys get this too. They always ask, like, where should I go watch a game? Like, guys weekend, family. And you know, like the obvious SEC ones, Alabama, LSU. Auburn, it's a great place to watch a game.
It is.
I mean, it is underrated. It's as good as anything. And, it's closer to Atlanta. Not sure it's easy to get a hotel. You're going to end up in Columbus.
Columbus, Georgia, baby.
Yeah. But
also, that's honorary spot for the Columbus Chamber of Commerce has been sealed.
It is one of those cities that you're like, oh, Columbus, Georgia, what? And you think it's like, and then you get there and you're like, it's pretty nice over here.
Nice little downtown, nice little Marriott, looking over the Chattahoochee, baby.
Give him the key to the city, baby.
Casey Powell on a billboard. Look over the Chattahoochee.
All I know is I believe this will be the last game of my all-time favorites, Smoke Monday for Auburn. I mean, Smoke Monday is one of the great names. I said last year, Smoke Monday was my favorite football player. And then Rocket Watts, the basketball player from Michigan State. He didn't do too well. Smoke's
what
a player,
what about Cavassier? What team is Cavassier on?
Cavassier Smoke is Kentucky running back. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. You can just transfer to the SEC East, Dan.
There you go. Pick a different Smoke.
Smoke. I'm good with Smoke. Smoke Monday. I mean, you just like, you name your kid Smoke Monday, he better be fast. He's going to be an Auburn cornerback. It's all done. Safety, whatever. Smoke and go, man.
Smoke him if you got him.
Smoke him. He can do it.
All right, final. Tech has a Smoke, too, by the way, which is
Smoke's getting popular, huh?
Yeah. James Franklin, 10-year contract agreed to per reports.
There you go.
Minutes ago.
Sorry.
Yep.
The game has already blown up on us.
Yeah, got big surprise.
That's the carousel.
Yeah, that's the carousel. All right, the other game, Bedlam. This one's always wild. It's literally called Bedlam. Oklahoma, it's in Stillwater, too, where the Bedlam is really Bedlam. Oklahoma at Oklahoma State, and there is all on the line. Both have just one loss. Both can win the head to the Big 10, Big 12 championship game. I think Oklahoma State is in regardless. So we would have, I think Pat called it Bedlam and Son of Bedlam if Oklahoma wins this. If not, Oklahoma State gets Baylor, and I think is very much in this playoff chase. I think they're going to have a resume that makes Cincinnati real nervous. But this game is nasty. It's wild. It's fun. The mullet is going to be flowing. It's extra special when there's so much on the line. Another great one. It's not getting the attention of Ohio State, Michigan, but this is just as big for the playoff almost. Pat, thoughts on Bedlam?
Yeah. Biggest game of Mike Gundy's career, period. That's my thought on it. They have the better team. They should win. They are at home, and this may be the last time Oklahoma comes to Stillwater till who knows when, depending on when they evacuate to the SEC. Mike Gundy has
terrible.
Been. I know.
They give the game up.
Yeah, it's terrible, but guess what's going to happen? You know, a bunch of rivalry games are going to get Smoke Monday.
We're going to get Texas.
Yeah.
We're going to get Texas A&M back, I guess. But
yeah, we'll get that, but we'll miss some other stuff. So Mike Gundy's been owned by Oklahoma. I mean, he has been pummeled in this series. He's lost some close ones, but he's lost a lot of blowouts. And now, with the playoff kind of looming on the horizon, with a Big 12 championship that Oklahoma State's never played in, you're going to get to that. But you win this one, and you take out Oklahoma, and you give them that boot out the door. Fine, you want to leave the conference? Your last game in Stillwater, we're going to kick you in the teeth, and you're not going to play for the Big 12 championship, and we are? Oh, boy. That's a lot of big stuff for the Cowboys. And again, I do believe they have the better team here this time. He's got to win this game, I think. I mean, it's not like he's going to get fired, but in terms of Mike Gundy, you know, if you want to be go down as the greatest coach in Oklahoma State history, you better win this one.
Yeah, well, if we needed to do like a hate-o-meter of, you know, there's a lot of hate normally in this game, right? But this year, with everything, you know, Oklahoma is going to play the spoiler in some ways. Oklahoma State certainly feels like a second-class citizen with Oklahoma bailing. Because remember, the last round of realignment, it was Oklahoma can't leave without Oklahoma State. No, no. Peace out. Smoke Monday. So the amount of hate in this game, in this stadium, you like, that's one of these rivalries where there are a lot of like split marriages between Cowboys and Sooners. That is like, it is intertwined as deeply in that. And this is like, this is going to be, Oklahoma going to the SEC is going to be like the nastiest divorce. Like both of them are going to get divorce lawyers from billboards. And they're just going to go at it. Like these, oh, so that, like, yeah. I have never been to Bedlam football, Pat. Have you?
Yes, one time, but it was anticlimactic. You know, it was like Oklahoma won by 3 touchdowns.
Okay. I've been to a bunch of the basketballs.
Yeah. Basketball's been good.
And I did go in Stillwater, and the thing, much like the basketball arena there, the stands are on top of the field, so it can get really raucous and intense. So it should be really good Saturday night.
I gotta say, I mean, Oklahoma State's a fine university, but I'd be really nervous about like their like engineering department or their construction, because they forgot the sideline.
Both of them. Oklahoma and Oklahoma State are the two tightest sidelines in the country.
It's like 6 inches of room over there. Like, yeah. What guys are just plowing into brick walls and stuff like that? Like, what? Girl, I'm tough out here. Got this kid from the east side.
Not like they have a whole lot of space in Oklahoma. No planes there. You could build a giant stadium.
The basketball stadium is like in the end zone. It's like you got all the sweeping planes. Like, spread it out, boys. Jeez.
The east side of Enid. Is there really like an east side and a west side to Enid? Or is it just all one side?
Dude, there's an east and a west side to everything. Your living room has an east side and a west side. It just depends how you move the marker.
Yeah.
Well, you don't mess with the east side of Enid, man.
I guess. Look,
this is the outsiders country, man. The Sox and the Greasers, like, they've been fighting for years around there. They just stab each other and Pony Boy and Soda Pop. I mean, you don't know what's going on in Oklahoma. You just don't. None of us will ever know. Things just happen. The guy with the mullet who's like total whack job is like the best coach, and the other guy's trying to be a brainy. That's not going to work. I don't know. Just go to Eskimo Joe's and get drunk.
I'm looking actually here at the map, and it does appear to be a pretty east-west town, okay, on 412. So, there is a place that's marked North End. So, you know, I don't know if that's
hometown
the good side.
Hometown of of Don Haskins, the late, great Don Haskins. That's how I
there you go. Okay.
Enid. Yeah, there you go.
I know. I hate to end our local geography lesson in the 405, but if you have a, like, gluttonous Thanksgiving and then a debaucherous day after Thanksgiving and roll out of bed around 11:15 on Saturday, you're going to have some pretty good football. That's going to be a pretty good day of football to watch, right? Because I believe you can go Ohio State, Michigan at noon, Alabama, Auburn at 3:30, and then Bedlam at night. And other very good games all thrown in. But that's like, if you're going to pick one day to be prone, that's a pretty good day to be prone.
That's pretty
good. Absolutely.
I just like mentioning obscure towns because I'll get a message from someone from Enid, like, dude, you mentioned our city. Like, I've been listened to 100 hours of podcasts a week. I've never heard anyone even acknowledge Enid exists. It exists.
Wait, you get one of two responses. Yes, somebody who's tickled that their town gets mentioned, or then somebody, you didn't accurately portray the civic charms of our
true,
city.
That's true.
It's a great place to raise
South
a family.
Enid? You're talking about East and West Enid all the time.
Bias to East Enid. It's a great place to raise a family, man. Well, you know what? If it was that great, more people would move there.
There would be more families.
Great sunsets. Everyone's got that. Where the hell is the sunset bad? That's what I want to know. Where is there a bad sunset?
Beijing, where it's all just smog. That's
okay.
It.
Yes. You don't want to hear me telling anyone to move to Beijing. I got to go
the
there.
The sunset in Columbus, Georgia, when it goes over the Chattahoochee.
Oh, that is lyrical. I'm telling you.
Great sunsets. All right. That's our pod. We'll be back to pick the games. You look it. You got to spend some time with your family on Thursday. You'll build up the hate. Keep it in. We don't have family fights, but then just unleash it out into the world as we get all these games. Whatever
starting
you're mad
8
about,
o'clock,
Apple.
8 o'clock Thursday night with the Egg Bowl. Use the hashtag CFE. We want to hear your hatred. Let's get it.
Yeah, bring it on. Hashtag CFE. Keep subscribing. Our audience just grows every single week. It's amazing. Keep telling your friends about us. We really, really appreciate y'all. And we will talk to you later.